Thursday, March 1st. Welcome to March, home of what they call March Madness. Welcome back to the Ione College Basketball Podcast. Got Matt Norlander here with me, and we've got a lot to get to, including a look back at two Power 5 league titles that were secured Tuesday night. But first, trivia time. Matt Norlander, can you tell me who leads the nation in top 50 RPI wins? There are three teams that have 10 each. That's the most in the country. Which three teams have 10 right now?
That's a good question. Okay, 10 of them. I will say Kansas.
Incorrect. Kansas has 7.
Wow. I will say Florida State.
Incorrect. Florida State has 9.
I will say... Woo! I'll say Baylor.
Incorrect. Baylor has 9.
And there are 3 with 10?
Yes.
I will say North Carolina.
Wrong. North Carolina has 9.
Dear Lord, Parrish. There are... Oh, my gosh. You said top 50 wins. 10 top 50.
Top 50 RPIs right now.
Is one of them, like, really, like, I'd never guess what you think? Or are they all relatively reasonable?
I think one of them is one that most people won't guess, and it's the reason I brought it up.
Okay. I still want a few more guesses here. I'm trying to just conjure this off.
Okay,
the top
there are three teams with 9. You've already named them. No, you've named 2 of them. Florida State, Baylor. There's one other with 9. There's none have 8. 8's empty. There are 3 teams with 7. Kansas is one of them, and there are 3 teams with 10. You haven't named any of them yet.
I know Gonzaga's not going to be one of them. I don't believe Villanova would be one of them. Am I wrong?
Villanova has 10.
Okay, wow, okay. Credit to the Big East. How about...
Stay in that league if you want to get one of the other ones.
Butler.
Yeah, Butler has 10.
Okay, is Butler the one you think people wouldn't have guessed?
Nope, it's the other one.
Okay. I wonder if... I don't think this is the answer, but because they played last night, is the other one Purdue?
It's not Purdue. Purdue doesn't even have 7.
Okay, didn't think they would. Is the team from a traditional Power 6 conference?
Yes. Team also played last night.
Kentucky?
Kentucky's got 7.
I didn't think they had 10. Let's see. I was admittedly buried in a story last night. Parrish. I love this. You have truly stumped me. I wonder if anyone listening is... pretty keen on who this would be.
You want a hint that I'll let you get it right?
Okay, go ahead.
They were the preseason number one team.
Duke does have 10. Okay, Duke, how about that?
How about that? No, but this is a factual statement right now. Wow. No team in the country has more top 50 RPI wins than Duke. Wow. That doesn't match up with the perception of Duke at all, does it?
It does not. It does not. Because they got 7 losses. Wow. Interesting. So they got their 10th last night.
Over Florida State. They're 23-7 overall. They got 10 top 50 RPI wins, 5 top 25 RPI wins, and then 5 more between 26 and 50. And they're doing this even though only 2 players have appeared in all 30 games.
Huh.
Like, I just think it's interesting because people like are big clowning Duke, and every time you mention that, hey, you know what, Duke ain't really that bad, like people sort of roll their eyes. But no team in the country has got more top 50 wins right now than the Duke Blue Devils.
Yeah, that could serve them really well, especially if they can, if they can go deep into the ACC tournament. That might wind up getting Duke to have a higher seed than people might expect, and then some people might lose their minds because if they don't get the auto bid, they're going to have 8 losses, maybe 9. They'll probably end with 9, to be honest, because they're. I think they'll lose at Carolina on Saturday in the finale and then maybe get picked off in the league tournament. Or maybe not. Maybe they win it. But intriguing that is. Yeah, and they get the good win last night. Close game. Florida State's a good team, obviously. And now, I mean, Frank Jackson, I know, played pretty well. We've reached a point here with Duke where it's like, you know, they've had some bad losses. They can beat just about anyone as well. So... it's just a matter of if they're going to be able to consistently put together a number of really good wins. What did you think about the way they played last night? And are you in on Duke still as a – because of those wins that they have, GP? Like, Would you put Duke on your three most likely teams you'd pick to win a title right now?
I don't know if I'd put them on the three most likely, but certainly they, you know, there's a handful of teams that got a shot, and they obviously have a shot. I don't like the fact that they don't have a natural point guard, a traditional point guard. You know, if you look back at recent national champions, almost all of them had a really strong player at that position. And I know you can call Grayson Allen a strong player at that position, but ideally he would not be playing point guard for this team. But can they win the whole thing? Of course they can. Again, right now, they put together this resume despite, like I said, only two players, Luke Kennard and Matt Jones, appearing in all 30 games. Harry Giles has missed 11. Jason Tatum's missed 8. Grayson Allen's missed 3. Emil Jefferson's missed 2. And then, of course, Krzyzewski missed 7 games in January because of back surgery. And like I said, they're still 23-7, 5 top 25 RPI wins, 10 top 50 RPI wins. And you say they've had a bunch of bad losses, and, like, I hear you, only 2 sub-40 RPI losses on the resume.
Yeah, losing at home to NC State's not.
I mean, that was just terrible, right? I mean, that was just all. I don't even, like, you could play that game a million more times. I don't think that would ever happen again.
That's the one really bad one, right, in particular. And right, then the Virginia Tech loss, which isn't even a bad one because Tech's going to get to the tournament. Grayson Allen wasn't even in that game. But that was they were, like, run out of the gym in that game. But I know what you're saying. They've compiled a lot of losses here.
Right.
But then again, so have a lot of other teams. I just think we're going to have a situation where, you know, to say this for the third or fourth time in the podcast in the past month, you're just going to have teams of 7, 8, 9 losses that are on the 2, 3, 4 line. It's an inevitability this season.
Right now, in terms of top 50 RPI wins, 10 each for Duke, Villanova, Butler, 9 each for Florida State, Baylor, North Carolina. Nobody has 8. 7 each for Kansas, Kentucky, and I don't think you would ever guess this other one. Right now, there's
ever.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. When you look at, I got 9 teams here that have at least 7 top 50 RPI wins. The one that we haven't named is like top 9 in terms of by definition. They're top 9 top 50 RPI wins right now at this moment.
From a traditional Power 6,
yes,
or?
Yes.
Okay. How about Oklahoma State?
Nope.
Okay. If they've got that many, they have to be in the field. I would think. You said it's 7 of them, GP?
7.
And it's really hard to guess, huh?
Yeah, I'll just tell you because you will not get it.
Give me one more guess. Give me one more guess here.
Okay.
Traditional Power 6. I will not get it. How about Minnesota?
It is Minnesota.
Oh, look at that.
It is Minnesota.
From way downtown, bang.
Minnesota. It's only 1 top 25 RPI win and 6 top 50s, but it is still 7 top, you know, 6 between 26 and 50, I should say. But it is 7 top 50 RPI wins. Minnesota right now ranks in the top 10 in the country in top 50 RPI wins. So, I mean, that's a pretty amazing job from Richard Pitino, right? I just thought it was interesting that all, like, you hear all the conversations about Duke that take place, and yet they are sitting here on March 1st with as many top 50 RPI wins as anybody else in the country. Anybody else in the country. And I don't know what it means any more than that's what it means. They're not nearly having the terrible season, that's a disappointing season that so many people think. It's only disappointing relative to the ridiculous. And let me rephrase. It weren't ridiculous preseason standards. They were reasonable preseason standards. They were based on Harry Giles being awesome and whatever. He hasn't been that, and they haven't been what they were supposed to be. But they're still good. If you can just scrap, you know, they're still a legitimate top, I think, 11, 12, 13 team in the country, and they are tied with Villanova and Butler for most top 50 wins in the country right now.
Yeah. And real quick on Minnesota, they ran the table in February. They had that big losing streak to start January, basically, but they have not lost since. And they get Nebraska at home on Thursday. We'll probably win that. And then a tricky one at Wisconsin this weekend. Sunday marks the official end of college basketball's regular season. But Minnesota, with those wins, if they don't skid out, they don't lose to Nebraska, if they don't drop their first Big Ten game because of that, I mean, they could wind up on the 6 line there. I think that's entirely possible. Good stats. I love it, GP. Love it.
Let me tell you about SeatGeek real quick. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long, long time. It's not anymore because you're using SeatGeek and you're using the CollegeBB promo code. That's promo code CollegeBB. Here's what you're going to do. Download the SeatGeek app, purchase tickets, use the promo code CollegeBB, and SeatGeek's going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. It is the easiest ticket site out there, and here's why. Once upon a time, you'd have to check, this site, that site, this site, that site, compare prices, pray that you're not getting ripped off. You don't have to do any of that anymore. You just go to SeatGeek. They handle price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites for you. It's going to ensure that you get the best possible deal. In other words, SeatGeek's going to do all the work. You get to save time. You get to save money. So whether you're going to the website, SeatGeek.com, or downloading the app, just do one of the two. Do both. Then purchase tickets. Use the promo code CollegeBB, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, promo code is CollegeBB. That's SeatGeek. Millions of tickets in one place. So last night, Kentucky secured at least a share of the SEC title. Purdue secured at least a share of the Big Ten title. Let's take them one by one in that order. Is it more concerning that Kentucky had to rally from 19 down at home to beat Vanderbilt, or more impressive that Kentucky could rally from 19 down at home to beat Vanderbilt?
I would lean concerning. That was the largest deficit Kentucky had faced at home in a really long time. And to get the win is a killer for Vanderbilt's at large hopes. If Vandy had actually managed to get that, they would have slipped right onto the bubble there. Now, Kentucky went Kentucky, and I know Monk had some good moments near the end there to get that. Okay. Yeah, I mean, if you want to say that Kentucky now has a certain level of confidence that it can come back from many a team and that Monk can be the guy to do that because, he had a couple of huge plays. Briscoe had that big putback on a Monk drive. I understand that, but you obviously cannot – you cannot make a habit of this.
Right.
You will get burned and you will get knocked out of the tournament. Like if you're facing in the second round, even let's just place Kentucky on the 3 line. Okay. And you're facing a 6. I mean, it's unlikely that you'll be able to afford to be down 15 points with 12 minutes to go and are going to be able to come back. Not that it's impossible. It's just not likely. So that would be a little more concerning to me. I will say that it was, sometimes senior nights can just have these weird effects on these teams because they can be emotional nights. Derek Willis proposes to his girlfriend. What's with these? Colin Hartman did this at Indiana, by the way, as well. Like, what's with these dudes wanting to get married at 21? I don't get this.
Well, that's the thing. What are you doing? Listen, I got married young, and my wife was young. But
you're like, I speak from experience, man. What are you guys doing?
No, listen, best day of my life, best decision I ever made. But in all seriousness, you don't know who you are when you're that age, and your spouse doesn't know who she is at that age. You just don't like. I'm not saying it can't work. It can work. Obviously, it can. But, I don't think you really start to know who you are till you approach or in your 30s. Like, you don't have any – at the age of 22, 23 years old, you don't know who you want to spend the rest of your life with. You don't even know what matters to you in life yet.
With that said, congrats to Derek Willis.
Yeah, congrats to Derek Willis.
Nothing but happiness to come.
I'm sure it'll go beautifully.
Yeah, but hey, listen.
Do you disagree? Do you disagree?
No, I don't disagree.
You don't know who you are.
I said from the time I was 15 that I didn't want to get married before I was 30, and I did not. Enjoyed my 20s, and yeah. But listen, you want to get married, knock yourself out. This is apparently becoming a thing, though. Dudes proposing on their senior nights to their, girlfriends. It's love is in the air, I guess.
But in all seriousness, the positive, the pro to getting married early, getting married young, is that you can get onto your second wife while you're still young too.
Listen, we've said that to Jeff Borzello, and there's definitely something to be said for that.
Right.
And you can hit that midlife crisis early. Be sure to go strong into your second act. A lot of things to be positive and optimistic about.
Sure.
But the point I was making in general was, these senior nights can sometimes just get away from you just in terms of the emotion. It's not an overwhelming trend, but there are definitely times where these teams will have these big senior night moments, and then, oh, by the way, they lose. Or, like, you know, the NBA champs or the Super Bowl champs have these big moments to put up the banner, celebrate the ring, whatever, and then they go on to lose. So sometimes it just seems like there's so much behind these games heading into them that maybe, you know, you can just be a little off just because of all the things surrounding it. And so that might have been a factor for Kentucky there. They were able to rally. I maintain that, you know, Monk and Fox wasn't good. That was also an issue. He was, I think Farnham said near the end of the game that he's just been, you know, way too careless, oddly careless with the ball overall. But if Bam can still play well, they'll still have a good chance. But no, I would lean toward having a little bit of concern there. Vanderbilt's not good enough where it should be up by 19 in Rupp.
I agree completely. Like, it was awesome to watch them come back and to see Malik go big again in the second half. I guess he had 30 in the second half against Florida over the weekend and put 20 in the second half against, or maybe more than that, but it was like a big number again in the second half last night against Vanderbilt. Like, that's fun, but like, that's not the way you, like, he won't be able to put a cape on every time. And, you know, falling behind by double digits at home to Florida, then falling behind by double digits at home, like 19 points at home to Vanderbilt, like, that's not a good trend. And so the idea that they got out of them both times, those holes, like, impressive, independent of everything else, impressive. But you're exactly right. Like, you dig a hole like that in the second round, NCAA tournament against a quality team, you might not get out of it. You do it in the Sweet 16 against an even better team, you might not get out of it. You just don't want to play like that in a single elimination tournament. It is it's impressive that they are capable of overcoming basically anything, it appears like. But you try to do that you know, multiple times in an NCAA tournament, you're going to look up and you're going to run out of time at some point. And then your season's over and it falls well short of expectations. So I'm with you. I think probably more concerning watching them fall into the 19-point hole than it was impressive watching them climb out of it. But either way, SEC champions for the third consecutive year. Meantime, Purdue beat Indiana, secured at least a share of its 23rd Big Ten title. Caleb Swanigan got his 12th 2010 game and 24th double-double of the season. We know Purdue is Big Ten champions now. Are you convinced Purdue is also the best team in the Big Ten?
I'm pretty sure most people are convinced that Purdue is the best team in the Big Ten because Wisconsin, you know, listen, Wisconsin has not been able to play as well. Maryland obviously has slipped with Purdue having the lead, a one-game lead. Yeah, I believe that. And I kind of have believed it for well over a month now. Granted, it was a close race, and at one point, you know, Wisconsin did have the edge, but Purdue seems like the team that is most well built in terms of having a player of the year candidate. Listen, Vincent Edwards is a really good player that doesn't get enough pub. The backcourt is solid. They've got ability to shoot. So my overview of Purdue is a lot of people know about Swanigan. He's having an awesome year. Will be a first team All-American. Don't quite realize how well-rounded Purdue is. And actually, I think Purdue is equipped enough to make a Final Four run. I don't think I would put them there or predict them to get there, but I would rank them among a top 15 candidate. Now, maybe that's an indictment on the Big Ten that I don't even think I would put Wisconsin in there, and I wouldn't put any other team from the league in there. But I think for a lot of people, Purdue is just seen as like, okay, the best team in a Big Ten that's really not that great overall. You know, Purdue's not an inherently sexy program, so to speak. And so they see they've got Swanigan. Okay, maybe they'll get to the Sweet 16 and that's it. I think Purdue will probably end up with a 4 seed. What will be interesting is if they don't win the Big Ten tournament title, whether that does or doesn't matter, I don't know. Traditionally, because of the Big Ten tournament getting played so close to the reveal of the bracket, even though the committee has contingency brackets, GP, oftentimes the winner of that tournament, just it doesn't really matter. It has no impact on the seeding whatsoever. So the point I'm getting at here is if Purdue merely makes it to Sunday, their seed will probably be locked in. And if they do make it to Sunday in the Big Ten final, I would project they'll get a 4. Anything less than that, then, yeah, we could have a situation where the best team out of the Big Ten is a 5 seed, and that's got to be unprecedented.
It seems like I'm the only one still in the Caleb Swanigan for National Player of the Year campaign. Everybody else is basically giving it to Frank Mason already. Am I just being stupid here? Like, I look at Swanigan, 12 2010 games, 24 double-doubles for a Big Ten champion. And I know the Big Ten's not the ACC or the Big 12. It's still a top-four league, according to KenPom. Like, our buddy Rob Doster, he wrote in his Player of the Year rankings this week that he just couldn't give Player of the Year to somebody from the Big Ten. You know, the suggestion being, like, it's just, like, the league's not good enough. Well, like, Denzel Valentine was everybody's, was a lot of people's Player of the Year last year. You know where Big Ten ranked in KenPom last year? Fifth best league. This year's fourth best league. What's the – what? Am I crazy to to hang on with Swanigan?
No. In fact, I think it's good to have a little bit of debate and difference. I would probably lean Mason, but yeah. I actually like the Swanigan pick in part because there really hasn't been a player like him in college basketball as of late. And he's not just a true back-to-the-basket big. Steps out, shoots threes, shoots them well, does a lot for that team. And he's not he doesn't have to do everything, but he is – he's just so damn reliable. I mean, every single game, it's a double-double practically. And I had written about this earlier in the season, but, you know, the numbers that he's putting up in terms of double-doubles and big-time games, you know, 20-20 games, 30-20 games, all that stuff, has not been seen in a long, long time. So I'm fine with it, especially if Purdue can go on the road and steal it against Northwestern. I do think if they lose, he's probably got no shot because, you know, Mason's pretty comfortable right now. I think I would have Swanigan ahead of Hart at this point. So I'd go Mason, Swanigan, and that's pretty much it because Hart would be a little behind. Ball would be a little bit behind. But no, man. I don't think you're on an island either. I do think that, yeah, the majority has Mason at this point.
Yeah, and I got, like, let me be clear. I don't have an issue with somebody going with Frank Mason. Like, I'm not going to write the column saying, are you people blind? How could you vote Frank Mason National Player of the Year? Like, he's perfectly deserving. And if he wins all of the awards, then I'll say, yeah, that makes sense to me. I just, to me, when I look at who has been the most awesome college basketball player this year, like, Frank Mason's been really, really good. Great. He's been great. The most awesome, consistently awesome player. I think it's been Caleb Swanigan. And so right now, if we had to announce it today, the CBS Sports Devin Downey National Player of the Year Award would go to Caleb Swanigan. Nice. I think. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry Teagle. Somebody tweeted us, told us Terry Teagle got a shout out during the Baylor West Virginia game on Monday night.
I know. We were sitting there eating sushi before Run the Jewels.
RTJ.
so we didn't hear the Terry Teagle shout out, but anything we can do. Can we get a Calvin Natt shout out from any national broadcaster this weekend?
Somebody.
Can we get some Calvin Natt love?
Somebody shout out Calvin Natt with Terry Teagle and Devin Downey. And any broadcaster that can get all three in the same broadcast?
Oh, boy.
You'll get a shout out on the Ion College Basketball podcast, I promise. Let's look ahead there to tonight's games. There are no games featuring a ranked opponent against a ranked opponent. But VCU Dayton is a chance for Dayton to secure the outright A-10 title. Dayton's a 5-point favorite. Dayton knocks us out at home, right? They whether they cover or not, they're going to win the outright A-10 title tonight, right?
Yeah, this is biggest game of the year in the league, in my opinion.
You can watch it on CBS Sports Network.
There you go. Dayton locks up a bit. Dayton's going to get in, but a win here is a lock for Dayton, in my opinion. VCU could really use it because the Rams were unable to beat the Rams on Saturday. They went to Rhode Island, and they fell by 10 here. So they get you know, kind of a tough back-to-back road situation to close out their season. And if VCU can – if they can steal this, would be mammoth to sweep Dayton, which is in a better position in terms of overall standing among at-large candidates. So it's an intriguing game. I think both teams, I would prefer if both teams were in the field because I think they're good enough, overall, but what might end up happening here, Parrish, is, you know, Dayton wins at home. They split the season series. Maybe they both wind up getting to the A-10 final. Although the A-10 is a quirky tournament, you know, that's actually not in Brooklyn this year. It had been in Brooklyn the past 3 years and I'd gone every year. And, just a tournament that usually gets one team you don't expect into the semis, maybe one team you don't expect into the final. Occasionally, every blue moon, a team comes in and swoops in and takes the auto bid that you don't see coming, period. But maybe this year it's Dayton and VCU kind of separated themselves from the rest of the league, and they'll wind up playing in the tournament final. But I wouldn't count out Rhode Island. Rhode Island's actually in the field as of this recording, I believe, according to Palm. He would put him in. I think that's a decent call, but Rhode Island needs to dodge. They play at St. Joe's on Wednesday. You got to win that game. They don't really have a lot of wiggle room. So to me, Rhode Island, which is the third at-large candidate out of the conference, win at St. Joe's, beat Davidson on your home floor on Saturday, win an A-10 tournament game. Hopefully that will be enough. Key to note that Rhode Island has a big time win over Cincinnati that they've kind of been clinging to. That's really the one win in their non-conference that they can kind of hold up, and it's better than a lot of other teams that might be in similar spots, because VCU, their best non-conference win is over Middle Tennessee. I've actually got a piece on Middle Tennessee that should be up by the time you listen to this podcast. The Blue Raiders, who of course won last year in the tournament over Michigan State. If I basically start the piece, Parrish, by saying, listen, my colleague Gary Parrish wrote a great piece on Wichita State last week. He made the case that they should be in kind of no matter what.
That's a good way to start any column, I think.
Of course. And if you believe that, then Middle Tennessee should be kind of right behind them, but they just haven't had nearly the amount of pub. But their non-conference is kind of – it's better than Wichita State's. You know, they've got a road win against Belmont. It's the only loss of the year. They killed Vanderbilt by almost 30 points, more than 30 points. That's a big win as well. They won at Ole Miss. So it will be interesting to see what Middle Tennessee, how it's handled, because it's going to finish the regular season 27-4. It's going to kill its opponents this week. So anyway, that's a long way of answering your question about VCU Dayton. I will make time to watch that one tonight. It's a big one for that league. And give me Dayton to hold court on its home floor.
Yeah, I think Dayton wins because the game's being played in Dayton, and then that is going to be an outright A-10 title. I think the A-10 gets three teams in, Dayton, VCU, and Rhode Island. And just on Middle Tennessee State, I feel the same way I feel about Wichita State, Middle Tennessee State, Illinois State. I want them all in. Like, I got no interest in watching mediocre Power 5 schools who we know exactly what they are. They're teams that if you give them 10 opportunities to record quality wins, they can get three of them or two of them. And so we say, hey, they got two or three top 50 wins. That's better than these other schools, more than Wichita State. Like, whatever. Those teams are garbage. They're not going anywhere. I would much rather see an interesting Middle Tennessee team, interesting Wichita State team, interesting Illinois State team. Because the truth is with college basketball, those teams get so few opportunities to prove themselves against quality opposition in January, February, and early March, that we don't – like, you can't gauge how good they actually are. You don't know. It's a little bit of a question mark. Like, all of the advanced metrics love Wichita State. Like, top 10 in KenPom, 13th in Sagarin. The idea that that team, you leave them out of the NCAA tournament to put some mediocre 500 team from – a Power 5 league in? Like, why? And, like, I understand it's a flawed system, but, like, I was talking to Jay Billis the other day, and he used this phrase, and I tend to agree. Like, tie goes to the runner, and let the runner be Middle Tennessee. Let the runner be Wichita State. Let the runner be Illinois State. It's just, if you play in one of those Power 5 leagues, and you just sort of, like, whatever, but you got four top 50 wins because you got a million opportunities to do it. Like, we know what you are. You're somebody that is going to lose way more often than not when you play quality opponents. That's how you ended up in the spot that you were in to begin with. I'd much rather see the unknown of a Wichita State, the unknown of an Illinois State, the unknown of a Middle Tennessee. So I don't know if they'll all get in, but I hope they all get in. Real quick, bubble games tonight, Michigan at Northwestern, Kansas State, TCU, Michigan State, Illinois, Marquette, Xavier. Which one interests you most?
Probably Marquette, Xavier. Michigan, Northwestern is like a fringe bubble game because Northwestern's officially a lock if it wins. Michigan's, I think, officially a lock if it wins. Yeah. Right? I mean, you agree?
I think they're both in.
Winner that one's probably safe. I think they got to be safe. Like, can lose the finale and lose a Big Ten tournament game immediately. I would think either way, either of those teams, they're going to be okay. Northwestern, you kind of watch just to see if they can kind of wrap it up. They got the game on their home floor, and then they got Purdue coming. So Northwestern just needs to split its next two on its home floor. Should be able to do that. Marquette Xavier, man, Xavier was a top 15 team coming into the season. I think we had a top 10 GP. Now they don't have Edmund Sumner. Blewett has not been healthy completely as of late, but they are just on a skid. I don't remember how many years, but they've lost five in a row, and someone had said after that loss against Butler on Sunday, which Xavier took at home, I think it's been like more than 30 years since the program's lost five straight games. You got to get right here. I think I believe, and I've not yet kind of written out or typed out an order of at-large teams and how I would rank them, so to speak. But if Marquette wins this game, I've got to believe that these teams would flip in the at-large order. Marquette would own a win over Villanova, road win against a sweep of Xavier. Wait, because they beat Xavier like not even two weeks ago, I think. I want to say I remember that. That, I think, would be enough to put Marquette into the mix here. And Xavier, which has just watched its seed slip game by game, I think it if it were to lose a sixth in a row, I mean, it would need a deep run into the Big East tournament to probably save itself. Because remember, I harped on this earlier in the season, Xavier's non-conference performance unfortunately didn't afford itself a lot to boast about. I mean, it defeated Clemson. That's not an NCAA tournament team. It defeated Utah, and the Utes are far from being NCAA tournament quality, in my opinion. They've taken on too many losses, and really are. Utah only has 16 wins in Division I this season. They opened the season with two teams outside the D1 ranks. So it's the most critical and urgent game of the night, GP, I think. So Xavier hosting Marquette is the one that I would lean to.
Yeah, I mean, and it is a massive game for Xavier because, you know, at some point the committee goes, okay, fine. Yeah, you were safely in the field when you had Edmund Sumner. You don't have it anymore, and now you've lost six straight games if they lose tonight. Like, you could really – that could be a team that, you know, goes from being in the top 25 in February to being out of the NCAA tournament in March. And so, yeah, they got to get right tonight. They get Marquette at home, and then, of course, they got to go to DePaul. So they could reasonably finish the regular season with a 10-8 Big East record, but I would advise them to do that. Or else, they might go into the A-10 tournament, or the Big East tournament, rather, with a little bit of work to do. Remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. That's the best way to get the latest episodes as quickly as possible. So please do that. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you again on Friday. Till then, take care.